Have you ever like just pressed your hands against your closed eyes?
Oh, yeah, just really applying that intense pressure there for a few seconds.
Right, exactly. And suddenly you start seeing those strange shifting geometric shapes. You know what I'm talking about, right? Those little pulsing checkerboards or, I don't know, swirling neon patterns just blooming right out of the dark.
I mean, almost everyone has stumbled onto that trick at some point, usually as a kid,
Yeah.
right? Just sitting in the back of a car, completely marveling at this free homemade light show happening behind your own eyelids.
Oh, I used to do it constantly. Or perhaps you've read accounts of the really intense geometric visions people report during near-death experiences.
Right, or even migraine auras.
Yes, those jagged, shimmering lines that float across your field of view right before a migraine kicks in. Or, of course, the incredibly vivid, intricate kaleidoscopic geometry that people describe at the peak of a psychedelic experience.
Well, when you lay them all out like that, I mean, you realize we're talking about wildly different biological events here, right? Because a migraine is a neurological condition. Rubbing your eyes is just physical pressure. And a psychedelic is a really powerful chemical intervention.
But the visual phenomena they produce are shockingly, almost impossibly similar,
Exactly.
which is exactly what we are tackling today. We have a fascinating article from the OOTW Journal on the table, and it's titled The Geometry of Hallucination: Why the Brain Sees Spirals and Lattices.
It's a great piece.
It really is. So our mission for this deep dive is to explore one of the most beautiful and, frankly, bizarre discoveries in all of neuroscience.
Yeah, it's wild.
We're going to unpack why the human brain produces the exact same geometric shapes across completely different altered states. And spoiler alert, we're going to learn how these shapes are not just random glitches. They are a literal physical map of your brain's internal wiring.
Grounding this conversation from the start is absolutely crucial because we are not just talking about simple visual
All right, it's
noise.
not just static.
No, this isn't a biological error or your eyes just playing tricks on you.
Yeah.
We are uncovering a universal mathematical language of the mind. And honestly, by the end of this deep dive, you will never look at a trick of the eye or, strangely enough, a zebra's stripes the same way again.
I have been waiting for the zebra connection ever since I read the source material.
It's coming, I promise.
Awesome. But before we can explain the hidden machinery creating these shapes, we really have to establish what exactly everyone is seeing.
Right, the shapes themselves.
Yeah. To do that, the article takes us all the way back to the 1920s and introduces a German-American psychologist named Heinrich Kluver.
So Kluver was a serious, highly respected perception researcher. But, psychology in the 1920s was a very different landscape.
It was a bit more of the Wild West.
Exactly. Researchers were actively searching for the fundamental structures of consciousness. And to find them, Kluver basically decided to turn his laboratory inward. He used himself as the primary test subject.
He went the self-experimentation route, which honestly sounds a lot more intense than just rubbing his eyes.
Oh, considerably more intense. Kluver chewed dried peyote buttons.
Wow.
Yeah, which contained the powerful psychedelic mescaline. And then he meticulously cataloged his own visual field.
Just taking notes while tripping.
Essentially, yeah. Now, a psychedelic experience is famously chaotic, right? It's flooded with personal memories, intense emotions, bizarre distortions.
Right, a lot of subjective stuff.
Exactly. But Kluver was looking past all that subjective noise. He was hunting for the underlying architectural framework of the hallucination itself.
So he was kind of stripping away the wallpaper to look at the structural studs underneath.
That's a great way to put it. And the studs he found completely changed the field.
Really?
Yeah, because he realized that beneath all the shifting, deeply personal content of his visions, the fundamental geometry just kept repeating. And it wasn't just true for him either. When he cross-referenced his findings with the reports of countless other subjects, he found the exact same architectural patterns.
Right. According to the journal, Kluver managed to distill the infinite variety of human visual hallucinations down into just four recurring categories,
Yes.
and he called them form constants.
The four form constants. They are literally the fundamental building blocks of human visual hallucination.
What are the four?
So category one includes gratings, lattices, honeycombs, and checkerboard.
Okay, kind of grid-like stuff.
Exactly. Category two is cobwebs. Category three includes tunnels, funnels, cones, and vessels. And the fourth and final category is spirals.
Wait, gratings, cobwebs, tunnels, and spirals, that's the entire
That
list.
is the entire menu.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. From those four categories, Kluver made a really radical foundational claim. He said that every complex hallucination you can possibly have, no matter how intricate or alien it seems, is simply a modification, a layering, or a transformation of those four basic primitives.
Okay, let's unpack this. Are you saying these four shapes are essentially the visual cortex's version of like ones and zeros in computer code?
Basically, yes.
Because if I'm understanding this right, no matter how elaborate the software of the hallucination appears to, say, I don't know, a massive spinning crystal palace, the hardware of your brain is literally just compiling those four basic geometric shapes beneath it all.
What's fascinating here is that analogy perfectly captures the dynamic between the experience and the biology.
Right.
The conscious mind is experiencing the complex software, but the biological hardware is just rendering basic code.
That's incredible.
And the implication of this is massive, because if these shapes are universal biological building blocks, it means the geometry doesn't come from the drug itself.
Oh, sure, right.
Mescaline doesn't contain a tiny spiral hidden in its molecular structure.
And the geometry obviously isn't coming from the external world because your eyes are closed.
Exactly. It comes entirely from the machine doing the seeing. The brain isn't, you know, receiving a broadcast from somewhere else. It is revealing its own intrinsic nature.
But, I mean, knowing that the brain only renders four basic shapes creates a massive logical problem, doesn't it?
Oh, so?
Well, the real world is full of infinite complexity. You know, faces, trees, messy landscapes. If our internal hardware operates on these basic primitives, how exactly does our brain map the messy reality of the outside world in the first place?
Ah, right. Solving that problem requires us to open up the hood and look at the physical architecture of the visual cortex. We really have to follow the signal.
Okay, let's follow it.
So when you look at the world, light hits your retina at the back of your eye.
Right.
But that image is completely useless until it gets redrawn onto the primary visual cortex, a region called V1, which is located all the way at the back of your head.
Let me stop you there, because I think a lot of people assume the retina just acts like a film projector, right? Like it's beaming a perfect one-to-one photograph directly onto the brain tissue.
Oh, definitely not.
Right. The translation from the eye to the cortex is actually heavily distorted.
The distortion is actually the key to this whole mystery. Think about how human vision prioritizes information.
Okay.
The very center of your gaze, a tiny spot on your retina called the fovea, is designed to capture incredibly fine detail.
Like when you're focusing on a single word on a page.
Exactly. To process all that high-resolution data, the brain has to assign a massive amount of physical cortical real estate just to the center of your vision.
Which means your peripheral vision, you know, the stuff you only vaguely see out on the edges, gets completely shortchanged.
It gets physically squished. The entire outer edge of your visual field is crushed into a tiny little sliver on the surface of your cortex.
That's so weird to think about.
Right. So the physical map on your brain is completely warped. And decades after Kluver's work, in 1977, a researcher named Eric Schwartz finally captured this specific distortion mathematically.
He found the formula for the squish.
He did. He discovered that the retina to cortex map follows a strict mathematical rule called a complex logarithmic mapping.
Okay, complex logarithmic mapping. That sounds like something you'd find in a graduate level math textbook.
It does.
But the consequence of this math is incredibly visual and completely mind-bending, because the article explains that due to how this distortion squishes the periphery and expands the center, the shapes we see out in the world are translated into completely different physical shapes on the actual surface of our brain.
It is arguably one of the most elegant translations in biology. Schwartz proved mathematically that if you stare at a pattern of concentric circles, or a starburst of radiating rays, or a spiral, that complex logarithmic map translates those intricate shapes into simple parallel straight stripes of electrical activity on the flattened surface of your visual cortex.
Hold on, I'm struggling with that. I need to push back on the mechanics here. A spiral is this beautifully complex fluid rotating curve. You're telling me that when I look at a spiral, the electrical firing actually happening on my brain tissue is just a boring set of straight diagonal lines?
As counterintuitive as it sounds, yes.
It is insane.
I know. A circular ring in your visual field becomes a set of straight vertical bars on the tissue of your cortex.
Okay.
A starburst pattern becomes horizontal bars. And a spiral physically maps as diagonal bars.
That is wild. It's like, imagine you're standing in front of a giant funhouse mirror.
Okay, yeah.
And the mirror itself is heavily worked, right? It's bulging out in the middle and squished on the sides.
Right.
If someone takes a marker and draws a perfectly straight, boring line directly onto that warped glass, to you looking into the mirror, that line is going to look like a twisting, elaborate spiral.
Yes.
The distortion isn't in the ink. It's in the curvature of the surface the ink is drawn on.
Your funhouse mirror analogy hits the nail right on the head. The visual cortex is the warped mirror. And the true beauty of Schwartz's mathematical discovery is what happens when you reverse the flow of information.
Reverse it how? Like looking at the mirror from the inside.
Exactly. Think about the conditions of a hallucination. Your eyes are closed.
Yeah.
The room is dark. There is no image coming from the outside world to be mapped.
Right. Zero input.
But what if the brain itself, for its own internal reasons, spontaneously starts generating simple parallel stripes of electrical activity right on its own surface?
Oh, if the brain draws a straight line of ink on the inside of the funhouse mirror.
The conscious mind, which has spent your entire life learning to interpret signals passing through that logarithmic map, reads those physical straight stripes and perceives them as tunnels, funnels, and spirals.
Wow.
The boring straight line activity in the physical tissue is translated into beautiful swirling geometry in the conscious mind.
So straight lines in the brain become spirals in our vision.
Precisely.
I mean, I'm with you on the math, but that opens up a gaping plot hole in this biological story.
What's the plot hole?
Why on earth would a completely dark, resting brain spontaneously decide to generate perfectly straight lines of electrical activity?
Ah, yes.
The brain isn't just up there playing tic-tac-toe with itself. What forces those stripes to appear on the cortex in the first place?
Answering that plot hole requires us to step away from neuroscience for a moment and look at a discovery made in 1952 by Alan Turing.
Wait, Alan Turing? The brilliant mathematician who cracked the Enigma code during World War II.
The very same.
Okay, wasn't expecting him to show up.
Right. But shortly before his tragic death, Turing published a paper on something entirely unrelated to cryptography.
What was it?
He was obsessed with a biological mystery. How does a featureless, uniform system, like, say, a perfectly round, undifferentiated biological embryo, spontaneously grow complex patterns? So he developed the mathematics for what he called a reaction diffusion system.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The article points out that Turing's reaction diffusion mathematics are the exact same mechanics responsible for the spots on a leopard, the stripes on a zebra, or even the way sand ripples into perfect waves when the wind blows across a dune.
Yes. Turing discovered a universal law of nature. It's a mechanism for self-organizing instability.
Self-organizing instability.
Yeah. To picture how it works, imagine a microphone placed a little too close to a speaker.
Okay.
A tiny random sound goes into the mic, comes out of the speaker a little louder, goes back into the mic, and loops.
Oh, you get that horrible, deafening feedback screech.
Exactly. The system feeds back on itself until it hits a maximum threshold.
Right.
Turing realized that in biology, you have chemical activators, that's the microphone trying to amplify a pattern, and chemical inhibitors, putting distance between the mic and the speaker, trying to suppress it.
Okay, I follow that.
So fast forward to 1979, and two researchers, Bard Ehrmantraut and Jack Cowan, realized that the human visual cortex is basically a giant Turing machine.
Wait, how does the brain act like a zebra's coat? Those seem like fundamentally different mediums.
Well, they modeled the primary visual cortex as a flat sheet made up of two competing forces. You have excitatory neurons, which act like Turing's activators, shouting fire to their immediate neighbors.
Right.
And you have inhibitory neurons, which reach a bit further out and whisper, quiet down, stop firing.
So there's a balance?
Normally, yes. These two forces are locked in a perfect tug of war. The cortex is a quiet, uniform sheet.
But Ehrmantraut and Cowan asked, what happens if you disrupt that tug of war? What if something tips the scales so the excitatory neurons start shouting a little louder than the inhibitory ones can suppress?
And that's the trigger. The system loses its stability. And here is where Turing's math takes the wheel.
Okay.
When that flat, quiet sheet becomes unstable, it doesn't just erupt into random chaotic static.
Yeah.
Because the excitatory neurons only reach a short distance and the inhibitory neurons reach a slightly longer distance, the feedback loop organizes itself into alternating bands.
Bands of intense firing, separated by bands of absolute silence. It forms stripes.
Spontaneous, perfectly spaced stripes, hexagons, and rolls of neural activity.
That is just staggering. I really want to emphasize this for you listening right now. The exact same mathematical laws that cause pigment to gather into stripes on a zebra out in the savannah are governing the electrical signals decorating your field of view when you close your eyes and hallucinate.
It's incredible.
Biological tissue is just a medium for the math to play out.
It is the exact same law of nature, just operating in a different medium. In a zebra, the ingredients are diffusing chemicals in the skin.
Right.
In your brain, the ingredients are the spreading electrical chatter of neurons.
And when those spontaneous Turing-generated stripes of electricity are fed backwards through that funhouse mirror we talked about, Schwartz's logarithmic map, they bloom in your vision as Kluver's form constants.
Yes.
The stripes become the tunnels and the spirals.
Bringing this model to its ultimate conclusion, in 2001, a researcher named Paul Breslauf and his colleagues extended the Ehrmantraut-Cowan model with one final piece of anatomy.
What did they add?
They added the brain's orientation column.
Orientation columns. What are those?
They are tiny, specialized columns of cells in the visual cortex, specifically tuned to detect edges, angles, and contours in the real world.
Okay.
Breslauf's team took the Turing math and ran it through this added layer of complex edge-detecting hardware.
Wait, so if you add edge-detecting hardware to the simulation, I have to imagine the math suddenly spits out those more complex angled shapes, right? Like the cobwebs and the honeycombs.
That is precisely what happened. The math generated the remaining form constants perfectly. All four of Kluver's primitive classes can be generated purely from the physical wiring of the cortex the moment it becomes unstable.
So what does this all mean for the scale of what we see? Like, why are they a specific size?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it explains not just the shapes, but their exact proportions.
Oh.
Yeah. The physical distance between the excitatory and inhibitory brain cells literally sets the intrinsic wavelengths of the instability.
So the cell spacing determines the pattern size.
Exactly. That wavelength dictates the scale of the pattern. That's why a hallucinated honeycomb has a specific, consistent cell size. You are watching the physical dimensions of your own neural circuits rendered as a Turing pattern.
Okay, we have the warped canvas, right? The funhouse mirror.
Yep.
And we have the Turing instability generating stripes. But if our brains are built with this architecture all the time, why aren't we just walking around the grocery store seeing neon honeycombs and cobwebs?
A very fair question.
What actually provides the push to reveal this hidden architecture?
To find the catalyst, we have to look at the neurochemistry. We need an event that tips that tug of war between excitation and inhibition.
Right.
The article points to a very specific receptor in the brain, the serotonin 5-HT2A receptor.
Ah, this is where we bring the psychedelics back in.
Yes. Classic psychedelics, LSD, psilocybin, DMT, mescaline, all act as chemical agonists on this specific 5-HT2A receptor.
An agonist, meaning it fits into the receptor like a master key sliding into a lock and forces it to activate.
Exactly.
But where exactly are these specific locks located in the brain?
They are heavily concentrated on what we call pyramidal neurons, which are located deep within the layers of the cortex, including the visual areas.
Okay, pyramidal neurons.
Yeah, these are massive excitatory cells shaped like tiny pyramids. Think of them as the main broadcasting towers of the brain.
Broadcasting towers, got it.
When a psychedelic master key unlocks those receptors, it dramatically increases the sensitivity of these towers.
So it basically turns up the volume or the gain on the fire signal.
It ramps the gain way up. And this completely overwhelms the local inhibitory neurons.
The tug of war is lost.
The delicate balance is shattered. The primary visual cortex is driven past its stability threshold. And those latent Turing patterns just bubble up from the background noise into visible geometry.
And we actually have modern imaging data that captures this happening in real time, right?
We do.
Yeah. The source discusses a 2016 fMRI study by a researcher named Robin Carhart-Harris and a team led by Mendel Kalin and Lior Roseman. They put volunteers in a brain scanner, administered LSD, and had them close their eyes.
And the results were definitive. Even with their eyes completely closed in a dark tube, the early visual cortex areas of the subjects started communicating furiously.
Like it was seeing something.
Yes. The visual brain essentially lost its tether to the outside world, but because its gain was turned up so high, it fell back on the only structural information it had left, its own internal retinotopic wiring.
It's remarkably similar to a computer screensaver, isn't it?
And a fun way to think about it.
Well, you know, when there's no input from the mouse or keyboard for a while, the system doesn't just turn off. It runs its own internal diagnostic patterns, you know, bouncing a logo around the screen just to keep the pixels active.
It is a biological screensaver drawn using Turing's math. But, you know, the most compelling proof that these shapes belong to the brain's architecture and aren't just some unique trick of psychedelic chemistry is that non-drug triggers produce the exact same geometry.
Which brings us back to the migraines.
Right.
I've had friends describe these vividly. Before the actual headache hits, they see jagged, geometric, zigzagging lines that slowly expand across their field of view.
Neurologists actually call those fortification zigzags because they look like the aerial view of a medieval fortress.
Oh, that makes sense.
In 2001, a study by Hajikani and her team used fMRI to map what happens during a migraine aura, and they observed a phenomenon called cortical spreading depression.
Which, just to clarify for everyone, has absolutely nothing to do with emotional depression, right?
Right. Completely unrelated. Cortical spreading depression is essentially an electrical tsunami in the brain.
An electrical tsunami?
Yes. It's a slow-moving wave of intense hyperexcitation, followed immediately by a wake of absolute electrical silence, sweeping millimeter by millimeter across the tissue of the visual cortex.
So it's a completely different catalyst. It's a slow-rolling neurological wave instead of a chemical key in a lock, but it's sweeping across the exact same physical map.
Exactly. Because it travels across that same complex logarithmic map, passing through the orientation columns we talked about, its geometry is translated into your vision as that characteristic expanding geometric zigzag.
Wow.
It is a direct cousin of Kluver's four-form constants.
So what does this all mean if I'm synthesizing all of this? Pressing your hands hard against your closed eyes to put physical pressure on the optic nerve, getting a neurological migraine, or taking a powerful chemical psychedelic, they're all essentially just plucking the exact same guitar string in the brain. You're just using different amounts of force.
That is exactly right. The trigger truly doesn't matter.
It's just energy.
The trigger only supplies the physical or chemical energy to vibrate the string.
Yeah.
But the intrinsic architecture of the brain itself, the shape of the guitar, dictates the chord that rings out.
The logarithmic map, the orientation columns, the Turing, that's the shape of the instrument.
You got it.
Any force that destabilizes the cortex is going to play that same small family of geometric notes. Which brings us full circle, I think. It's time to pull all of these incredible puzzle pieces together into one final takeaway for everyone listening.
Well, when we assemble all the history, the math, and the neuroscience we've unpacked today, it leads to a quiet but profound revelation.
Yeah.
When you close your eyes and experience a geometric hallucination, you are not peering into another dimension.
Yeah.
You aren't seeing the shape of a drug molecule.
Right.
What you are witnessing is your visual cortex rendering its own physical structure into a conscious experience. The wavelength of its cellular circuits, the lattice of its edge detectors, the logarithmic curvature of its mapping, all of it becomes visible to the mind's eye. When you watch that spiral turning in the dark, you are literally looking at the physical shape of your own seeing.
That honestly gives me chills. It's biology manifesting as abstract art. But, you know, it also leaves me with a lingering thought, something I want to leave with you to mull over long after this deep dive ends.
Ooh, what's that?
Well, we've just spent this entire time exploring how a visual hallucination reveals the hidden geometric hardware of our visual cortex. But vision is just one localized sensory system. So what does the structure of our abstract thoughts or the bizarre nonlinear logic of our dreams reveal about the hidden physical architecture of the rest of the brain?
That is a phenomenal question.
Right. If a spiral is just what our visual wiring looks like, what other invisible biological hardware are we experiencing every single day as conscious thought without ever realizing it?
If the visual brain has a shape we can literally see, the thinking, dreaming brain must have an architecture we can feel.
Exactly. And on that thought-provoking note, we want to warmly thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the OOTW Journal. We really hope you walk away with a profoundly new appreciation for the living machinery inside your head. The next time you rub your eyes and see those little checkerboards dancing in the dark, remember the funhouse mirror and remember what you're really looking at. Stay curious, everyone.